For Autosport.com and the Autosport magazine, you're listening to the Tank Slappers podcast. And on this week's show, we're going to be discussing everything from a dramatic, wonderful Spanish Grand Prix weekend. I'm your host, Lewis Duncan. And joining me, as ever, to discuss all of our MotoGP action is Oriol Puigdemont. And Yuri, I mean, you were there at Jerez. We all saw how special it looked on television. I mean, what was it like to be there? Because, you know, that was a really, really, really great weekend.
Yeah, it was pretty, yeah, hectic. Both Saturday sprint race and Sunday long distance race, because it was, I mean, both races were absolutely incredible. And yeah, I think that from now on, for the next, let's say, 2 to 3 races, we're having a new scenario ahead, given all the things that all the question marks that need to be solved.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it was kind of a funny one, because we had the sprint race on Saturday. We had 15 riders crashing. It all looked a bit kind of silly. You know, the riders were not really agreeing what the best way forward was with the damp track. And then Sunday, we have this incredible Grand Prix, and all of a sudden, you know, it changed the weekend completely. And we'll start with that battle between Pecco Bagnaia and Marc Marquez. It's something I must admit, I actually forgot that Pecco's first win in Aragon came, yep, with all that pressure from Marc Marquez so long ago. It wasn't until the media in the press conference mentioned it. But it's kind of been building for a while, this battle. We obviously had that Aragon contest, and then nothing for a couple of years, and then Portugal this year happened, and we thought, oh, okay, you know, a little bit of spice there in the Ducati camp, and then we got the proper head-to-head, and it was perfect as a spectator. It was absolutely what we wanted to see. And, you know, fair play to both of them, but that was a real champion's ride from Pecco. I mean, that's maybe his best ride ever in this championship.
Yeah, I think that Pecco knew that they both went for it, but I think from Pecco's perspective was that battle that he couldn't afford to lose. It was a declaration from him saying, yes, you are, I mean, the GOAT in many people's eyes, but now I'm champion, and I'm the champion, and I need to let you know that if you want to beat me, I'm not like most of the other riders on the grid. I'm a big deal here. So yeah, I think it was delicious to see that battle, and I'm convinced that we will have more of them in the coming races.
Delicious is a great way to describe it. It really was great. And I mean there was a couple of moments in that race that really kind of towards the end, it really set Pecco apart from me. The first one was obviously the overtake the Paluki at the turn 10 corner, where the two of them made contact, and the way Pecco first of all went for the gap, something that Marquez would have done, and the way he managed the contact, you know, Mark checked up, Pecco kept Lent, and then as soon as they come out the corner, that gave Pecco that momentum to then take the lead. And then on lap 23 or 24, when he set that, you know, race record lap, I mean, that was something else.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, as long as they keep this level of intensity, it's going to be okay. Hopefully, it's not going to rise more.
But I think it will.
Well, let's see. But yeah, I mean, as long as they understand where the limit is good, because they both like racing in that kind of level. But I think with the adrenaline going on, it's easy to lose a bit the perspective at some point. So hopefully they're gonna be able to keep the level in that window. And yeah, I mean, we've seen super aggressive mark, as we've always seen from him. And we also saw a very, very, very aggressive Pecco on defending. A very stubborn, very hard guy to overtake. So, yeah, I think we have the best ingredients for the next races.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, coming into this year with Mark jumping on that GP23 and obviously Pecco as a world champion, we kind of hoped that this would be the thing that we would see. And, you know, this weekend really from Mark was quite a big kind of moment in his season so far. Obviously, he's had sprint podiums. He led in America but crashed. He led in the sprint and then crashed but got pole at Jerez. But the Sunday race really seemed kind of like the... I don't want to say a new Marc Márquez, but like it seemed like the next step for Marc and his sort of evolution on the Ducati. You know, everything about that race was what we've been expecting.
Yeah, I think that now Marc, I mean, he went step by step with that Ducati at the beginning of the year, pre-season, beginning of the year, crashing in low numbers, but now that his adaptation to the bike has, he said that is complete. I think he's in that moment where he's hitting the limit. And of course, you know him, we all know him. So when you ride on the limit and so close to the limit, it's easy to go over the limit. And when you go over the limit, it's why we are seeing those crashes from him lately. But we used to have this from him even when he was in Honda, winning races. So I think it's the natural way of riding from him. I'm not talking about crashing, but I'm talking to finding the limit. And now he has the limit on the bike on his hands. He can feel the limit of the bike, or he's starting to feel the limit, and he knows it's very difficult to find that line. But I think he's getting there, and yeah, I think there is more to come from him. Definitely, I mean, he was super happy on Sunday because I think that he felt that he's fast again, and he's been able to fight for the victories again. And don't forget that, yes, he says that the adaptation to the bike is complete now, but I would say that he still have a bit of margin to be even faster. So, yeah, I mean, it's only four races from Mark in the Ducati, and we can see him fighting the current champion with, on paper, a less performing bike. So I think we are entering in a new dimension, and it's super exciting.
100%. I mean, even the way Mark does races now is a lot different to how we used to in the Honda days. You know, we used to see him, you know, if he was not in a fight, he would be quite keen to pull away early, you know, make the best and go and really just hammer his opponents as quick as he can. And Jerez, we saw, you know, he kind of got to a point. He was in that early battle with Jorge Martin and Pecco, and then he dropped behind to fourth behind Bezzecchi. And it kind of looked at that point like, oh, well, maybe the race is over then from that point. But it was just kind of clever managing the tires, managing everything, waiting for the opportunity. It seems like it's not just that Mark's got his speed back, but it seems there's just this new approach that he has works so much better.
Well, I think that we, as you mentioned, he is different than the Mark that we were used to be to see in the past before the injury in 2020. And now this is the approach that it needs to be done for this kind of racing. Now he's not so dominant. He's not as dominant as he was in the past. So he needs to have this approach, especially because he's a different rider after the injury, and he has, a spec B bike, a less performing bike. So this means that he needs to be clever and to have this approach in order to being able to fight for the wins. And this is not an excuse. It's what it is. I mean, that's, in my opinion, this is the explanation on why he is having this new approach, because he could have fought with Pecco at the beginning, yes, on the lead, yes, with Martin, yes, but maybe he would have not enough tires for fighting back at the end. So I think it's just the consequence of this new scenario that he has found himself in.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, he did also mention the fact that those early laps he was a bit stiff on the bike because of all the crashes he'd had. He was, you know, there was an element there that he was very kind of you know, nervous in a way, which, you know, is fair enough. I think going back to Pecco, I mean, you mentioned kind of how, you know, how he wanted to kind of go out and prove that, you know, he's top dog in this championship right now. There was a lot on the line there because of, you know, Martin crashing out and quite a surprising way did sort of turn the championship on its head at that point. Before he crashed, the gap was looking to be 47 points between Martin and Pecco. It's now 17 points, but of course, had Pecco crashed out, it would have been kind of a wasted opportunity in the championship against Martin. So there was, you have to give credit to Pecco there for that, managing that situation as well.
I think that Pecco is really, really probably one of the best on identifying the opportunities and go for them. So because the start that he had on Sunday was absolutely outstanding. I mean, that braking, overtaking two guys in one braking from the outside, on the outside, it was...
He deserved to win the race just for that.
Exactly. So he did the same, if I'm not wrong, in Thailand last year.
Yeah.
When everybody was expecting him to demonstrate why he was the champion. And he did it again. I mean, and now, after a difficult start of the season, he's only 17 points behind the leader. So I think Pecco is the best, probably, on the grid on identifying the opportunities and say, okay, now it's time for me to push and to try to make a step, and making them, which is even more difficult than only identify them.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, these next few rounds are going to be interesting because now Pecco has probably kind of you know, found himself again after this kind of tricky start to the season. He's now got to deal with Mark, who's just going to continue to get better. And of course, we are waiting to see what Jorge Martin's reaction is going to be to this crash at Jerez. Obviously, Martin, when he's been, you know, hit back a bit, tends to strike back really well. So, you know, the French Grand Prix coming up has got a lot of intrigue in it in terms of the inter-Ducati battle, the championship battle. And of course, you know, in terms of Martin and Mark, you know, the battle for that final factory Ducati seat, you know, that's, I don't think that's clear cut right now.
No. And don't forget Enea, because
100%.
With all the mess, Enea is only 5 points behind Pecco. He's P3 in the championship. And he's only 5 points behind Pecco. So yes, I think is also, and I mean, now I understand your point, and I can also see that the fight for this second factory Ducati seat at this stage is, in my opinion, is more between Mark and Martin, okay? Mm-hmm. But what happens if Enea wins in Le Mans?
Yeah, curveball. You've got Le Mans coming up, you've got Mugello coming up, you've got Barcelona coming up, all good tracks for the Ducati and the
riders. But I mean, what we see now, it might be completely different than the picture that we have after Le Mans. Imagine that Enea... He's won there in the past, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
So imagine Enea winning in Le Mans.
Yeah.
So the scenario, changed again.
And I guess you can't sort of rule out Bez as well, but Zeki is kind of looks to have found his way in that bike. If Bez goes on a winning streak, can Ducati ignore him for that ride
yeah,
as well?
Yeah, but I think last weekend they were pretty clear about the selection, the options that they have. They are looking at for this second factory seat, and the choose is between Marc Martin and Enea. Of course, if Betts wins in Le Mans and in Catalunya, it would be difficult for Ducati, but at the moment, and I think that this year with the difference, with the different performing from the GP23 and the GP24, it's difficult to picture Bezzecchi winning the next two races.
Yeah, no, I agree. Bez obviously had a great weekend in Jerez, but it has been a tough start, and I think there's still a little bit of a way to go to before he gets there. Looking kind of elsewhere in that race, there was some the chatter problems that Ducati have been suffering this year so far didn't seem to be a problem at Jerez, but KTM seemed to be the one struck by that this weekend. Pedro Acosta in 10th said the two factory boys said they had a bit of vibration as well. It's a kind of a tricky thing, because we thought initially, oh, maybe it's Ducati, but perhaps it seems there's a bigger issue there than just Ducati.
Well, I mean, so at the moment, I think the riders have started to be more clear, more vocal about the nature of those problems. Where can they come from? If you have two manufacturers that clearly speak about them, some tracks you have it, sometimes you don't. So I think it's quite obvious from which part of the bike these problems come from. It's a part sensitive, because all the time that the riders speak about this kind of component, which is the one from the same supplier and the unique supplier of the championship, they receive a warning from the heights. So I understand that they don't want to be clear about it, but if they are not clear about it, I'm not going to be clear either. So
To be fair to them, Pecco did say over the weekend he suspects it's the rear tire construction. He said that as such, and Acosta actually flat out said Michelin needs to look at this, which he might get, like you say, he might get in trouble for. But I mean, we've had this before with tire problems. We remember Qatar last year, and then the investigation and the reaction into Martin Singh. But this can't be the way in a championship like this, where if there is a key issue that is revolving around one thing, that the riders can't be vocal about it, because ultimately without tires you can't go racing. And if you know, it's one tire for everyone, so if something's negatively affecting people at different times, that's diluting the show.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
I mean, I understand, but I mean the tires is a loose battle.
Yeah,
I mean, they received a guideline at the beginning of the championship saying what they, with some advices about what they cannot say and what they can say about the bike. So about the tire, sorry. So I'm not losing my. Yeah, I don't want to talk about it, because if they don't want to talk about it, I'm not going to be the one pointing at nobody, because they are the main affected guys for this kind of problem. So they don't want to talk about it, I'm not putting myself in that battle.
That's fair. There is one thing I would like to be very critical of right now before we go any further, is this tire pressure rule, which we know has been tweaked a little bit for this year, but we saw quite a few penalties in the sprint race, and the biggest one coming for Fabio Quartararo, who rode a fantastic race from 23rd to 3rd, and then is hit with a penalty, presumably because his front tire pressure is set up to ride in a pack, then how all these crashes happen, and then there's nothing he can do about it. And we had this great podium celebration in front of all those fantastic fans for it then to mean nothing. And then they get a Danny Pedrosa ends up on the podium, but the podium's done in private in the paddock. That's crap. I'm sorry. That's a crap situation for the sport. It's a crap situation. It's a rubbish rule. Somebody really needs to, they need to have a look at that, because it's,
again, it's there. Again, it involves the same kind of element. So it's their call. In the end, it's their call. Everybody look at them and they say, "What are you doing this? Why are you doing this kind of tricky things and always never clear?" Mm. And okay, it's their call. If they wanna that people look at them like this, it's their call. But yeah, it's there's one thing that I really believe that they need to fix and do it soon, which is trying to be faster on that penalties, because I mean the KTM podium, the Danny's podium celebration between tracks was a bit of a, you know, I wouldn't say ridiculous, but it's not the way that a championship needs to celebrate the kind of podium, organize the team itself between tracks. So it's not the kind of image that you want to show the world. And it's just a matter of being fast with the penalties.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have the technology, let's decide.
But this is it. They have the tire pressure is an autonomous, you know, sort of thing. They have, it's not like it used to be where they had to go and check the pressures. They can do it. So, and just to go back to your point on Danny, we remember the reaction he got last year for his wild card from the fans. He was almost crying on the grid. You know, it was kind of, I thought the whole situation was disrespectful to a rider who's been fantastic for this championship for so many years, who means so much to those fans. And, you know, this situation just made that crap as well.
Well, I think for the good of the championship, they need to make this process much faster. So everybody's clear. You know, I remember when Max Verstappen won, I think it was the second title.
In Japan.
When he was in Japan, and am I champion? Am I not?
Yeah.
So this is not really good for the image of any championship. So in terms of penalties, if you put a penalty on place, you need to make sure that the result of that penalty will be public and will have an impact before the podium.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
It looks terrible.
Yeah, it's not great. I'll stop complaining now, and we'll talk about Yamaha and Honda, because it was tricky races for them in Jerez, as we expected. But obviously, we had the test on Monday after the Grand Prix. Yamaha had an all new bike to test, and Honda tested the lab bike that Brad will race in Jerez, that none of the riders seem very happy about. But Joan Mir mentioned that they tested a kind of a new concept that he seemed a lot more positive about. So it's kind of, I mean, Honda are working, which is good, but it seems like possibly they've found the right way to go. But, you know, we won't know that for a long time yet.
I really, regarding Honda, it's very difficult to understand. I don't think they understand what's going on, to be honest, because when you speak to the riders, I think Marin is absolutely lost in the wild jungle. And Mir, it just, you know, it's just tired. John is just tired of trying to hit the wall and having the same faces. I'm not even talking about answers. I'm talking about faces. So many people coming from Japan, new engineers that they stay there for two races, then go away. They change the engineers. They don't even know. I mean, you can only have to see the big boss face to understand how bad they are. I mean, this guy is suffering. This guy is suffering. And the problem is that I don't really know if they understand why they are suffering, which is the worst, because at least Yamaha is doing some stuff, is changing the mentality, is trying new things. Honda, nothing. I mean, yeah. They are just keep going on that philosophy, only bringing Japanese, more people, more Japanese, more Japanese, more Japanese, young Japanese, old Japanese, mid-age Japanese. But, I mean, you speak with the team, you speak with the riders, and they say, I know where to go.
Yeah.
Let's see if they understand that is the way to go.
Yeah, I mean, you contrast that with Yamaha. You know, you look at who's the technical director there now and stuff like that. And you look at the bike that they brought to the Jerez test, like it is completely different to anything Yamaha has kind of brought, you know, in terms of aero and stuff like that. But, you know, Fabio at the moment was quite neutral on everything he tried. He said positive and negatives. But it's, you know, if Yamaha can at least do that, and, you know, bring this whole brand new bike in quite a short space of time, and use these concessions properly, then maybe by the end of the season we could see things pushing towards in the right direction. But right now, you can't really see that happening for Honda. Like, you're in a position where the riders are so downcast that someone like Joan Mir surely can't really be looking at next year and looking at the Honda project long term because.
I mean, the only one is, I mean, that's the worst. I mean, you have the rider with the longer contract is the last of the grid.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the last. I mean, sometimes by more than 2 seconds.
Yeah.
1.8, 1.6. So you are in trouble. You are in trouble. And the problem is that the discrepancy that they have inside the team. Mm-hmm. Because Marini was chosen by the Japanese side, not by the European side of the garage.
Yeah.
So what's the point of having, he can be, Alberto Puig can be right or can be wrong, but at least if you have a team manager that is a former rider, you need to trust him. So they wanted to sign Luca, which with all the respect, but now they have a big problem.
Yeah,
because this guy, I think, is completely buried by the reality.
Yeah,
of Honda.
The other thing as well is Honda signed these two riders, Marini and Zarco, from Ducati, presumably hoping that they can bring lots of secrets with them. But if Honda aren't like kind of listening to them, then, you know, what's the point? And I take your point about Alberto Puig as well. I actually feel really bad for Puig because if you look at social media, you look at, he's constantly getting criticized, you know, Honda needs to replace him, Honda needs to replace him. And it's like, well, he doesn't build the bikes. He doesn't manage who builds the bikes. He's the guy caught between a rock and a hard place and the guy who will be thrown on the sword if things don't work out because he's the most public figure. And you do have to feel kind of, for whatever you think of Alberto Puig, you don't have to feel sorry for him throughout this entire situation.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, if he has the possibility of saying, okay, if they don't listen to me, what's my position here? I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, to be honest. I don't know what's going to happen, but I think he's in a difficult position at the moment because it's true that it's clear that the team Honda is choosing under the Japanese decision makers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much he will be able to resist this situation.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. A couple of things I wanted to touch on before we wrap up, Yuri. The first one is sticking with Honda and Johann Zarco. It seems things came to a little bit of a head between Zarco and Race Direction and the stewards on Sunday after the Grand Prix. And then on Monday, there was a Grand Prix commission rule change that sort of outlined that there had been a change in the way, you know, the kind of the people within Race Direction are kind of respected. I mean, what did you make of Zarco's comments about Freddie Spencer? Because he's not the first rider to be quite outspoken about
well,
him.
The problem is when most of the grid thinks the same way, you need to do something. You need to do something. Because sometimes you agree, sometimes you are favorite, or you end up being favorite from a decision, and sometimes you are being penalized. But what is true is that if you ask any single member of the grid, they would say, we need a change.
Yeah.
We need a change. And it's been a long, long, long time. So at some point, I think that somebody will take a decision, because it's very difficult to keep that pressure, that amount of pressure, under the same kind of panel. So for the good of the championship, I think something is neat.
Yeah. And just finally, obviously you've been to a lot of Grand Prix over your time, and you've been to a lot of Grand Prix, you know, in at Jerez and in Spain, and you know, we're moving into this Liberty era media where they're going to be looking to market the championship in a different way. And you know, MotoGP doesn't seem to have, you know, like an event like, you know, F1 does with Monaco, or you know, like the Le Mans 24 hours, you know, one thing every year that people can really cling on to. I think there has to be an argument made that Jerez, you know, can fill that sort of, you know, fill that gap, because we go there every year. The races are great. The fans are great. The passion that comes from Jerez, you know, just is really, really special. You know, those fans on the hillside at 6-7 in the morning, you know, that's quite unique. You know, we wanted to get your take. I know, obviously, being a Spaniard, you're going to have, I don't want people to think that influences your decision, but you know,
you've been to so many
Grand Prix.
I mean, Jerez is super special. It's super special. I think maybe making the comparison with Monaco is a bit too much, because I mean, Monaco for the last 50 years or 60, 70 years has been the only or the first urban, you know, race. Don't get me wrong, I love the Monaco Grand Prix. I've been there a few times for the Formula One, and don't get me wrong, it's a unique place. It's the most iconic race of the calendar. You can talk about Singapore, you can talk about Vegas, you can talk about Miami, but don't lie to yourself. I mean, Monaco is Monaco, and will always be Monaco.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this kind of thing makes Monaco a unique thing. I would say that from the many different perspectives, Monaco shouldn't be in the calendar, because it's crazy to think that they organize a race. Don't get me wrong, I'm in love with Monaco, and I would Monaco to be there forever. But from the logical point of view, it's mind-blowing. To consider that those streets allow a race. But I think in MotoGP, we don't have this kind of different thing, because we cannot race in a urban track. But yeah, I mean, from all the calendar, I would say that probably Jerez, it's one of those it needs to be there every year, because it's something special. I mean, we went to Portimao, and it's not the same. We will be in, I would say that probably Jerez, I would say probably Mugello, and I would say probably Phillip Island are the three that at the moment, in my opinion, are the three top races of the calendar in terms of attendance, in terms of how different they are from the all the other events.
Yeah, 100%. I think the problem MotoGP has had on the calendar for a long time is that we have lots of great tracks that we go to and lots of great races, but not that one kind of really special event on the calendar, like, you know, like, which is where the Monaco comparison comes from, or like the 24 hours of Le Mans. You know, there's one event in a calendar that's so special that even people who don't like racing very much, you know, they tune in and they watch
well,
that.
Well, but this is because, I mean, the unique idea of having a race there, it's mind-blowing.
Mm.
So while in MotoGP, because of the characteristics of the sport, you cannot organize that in a urban track. But, I mean, Monaco is mind-blowing to think that they organize a race and then they put a race in that street. And it's at the same time, is again, it's super good. It's amazing. But that's what makes Monaco absolutely the most iconic race of the calendar.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we do technically have a street race in MotoGP at Lombok, if you want to be very technical about it.
No, I've been there. I've been there. And I mean,
I didn't see any streets or buildings or you know, traffic lights there.
No, that's why when they call this a urban race, it's okay.
If you close your eyes and just imagine a street track, then it's a street track.
Yeah, and then you close your eyes and you imagine you're safe at home, and then maybe this is the closest the sensation that you will have in Lombok.
Yeah, for sure. But like, you know, going back to the Jerez thing, like, I mean, in terms of a fan experience, if MotoGP wants to have a race where it's like, come make this your one stop on the calendar, you know, I think it should be Jerez. Mark Marquez thinks the same. So if he thinks the same, then that's enough.
Yeah, fair enough.
On that note, Yuri, thank you very much for your company as always, and we'll see you next time when we gear up for the French Grand Prix. And if you enjoyed what you heard there, you can listen to all of our other podcasts. I mean, even if you didn't enjoy them, you can go listen to all of our other podcasts. You get them on all your podcast platforms, and keep reading everything on autosport.com and motorsport.com for all your MotoGP and motorbike action in general. Until next time, for autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, this has been the Tank Slappers Podcast, and thank you very much.